chill about the vibe. We got some of the introduction in the PA, Lord of Rhythm, and all glory to the symbol devotees, all glory to the symbol devotees, all glory to the symbol devotees, all glory to Shri Guru and Shri Guru. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pasaya Bhutare Srimati Bhakti Vrata Swami Kanane Namaste Karasudevi Gora Vani Kitane Nirvishay Shishin Nirvani Vasya Kari Shikarane.
Somebody made it too tight this morning. I was going to announce that they should not fail it.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Right, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 7, beginning the 7th chapter, text 1 and 2 will be today. This is the son of Drona Punish. Drona Kuvacha,
Drona Kuvacha,
Madhagate Narade Sutta,
Nidhavi Narade Sutta,
Bhagavan Bhadarayana,
Bhagavan Bhadarayana,
Bhagavan, the transcendentally powerful, Bhadarayana, Vyasadeva, the Vedavyas, Shrutavan, who heard, cut, his, Abhigretam, desire of the mind, Sita, thereafter, him, what, Akarok, Ethidu, Vibhu, the great. Translation purport by Divine Rishi of Bhagavad. Rishi Shonaka asks, O Sutta, the great and transcendentally powerful Vyasadeva heard everything from Sri Narada Muni. So after Narada's departure, what did Vyasadeva do? Report. In this chapter, the clue from striking through the Bhagavatam is picked up. Maharaj Cricket is miraculously saved in the womb of his mother. This was caused by a Droni, Ashtakama, Acharya Droni's son, who killed the five sons of Droni while they were sleeping, for which he was punished by Arjuna. Before commencing the great epic Srimad Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva realized the whole truth by trance and devotion. Text 2. Kutuvacha.
Kutuvacha.
Ramanadhyam sarasvatyam.
Ramanadhyam sarasvatyam.
Ashram paschime. Ashram paschime tete.
Ashram paschime tete.
Samya prasati bhukta.
Samya prasati bhukta.
Vishinam Satyavardhana.
Vishinam Satyavardhana.
Sutta Sri Sutta, Vacha said, Ramanadhyam, on the bank of the river, intimately related to the devas, Brahman, saints, and the Lord. Sarasvatyam, Sarasvati. Ashrama, Adhishtha meditation. Paschime, on the west, the bank. Samyaprasha, the place called Samyaprasha. Iti, thus, Rokta, said to be Rishinam of the sages, Satyavardhanam, that was the mind of activities. And translation report, Dr. Prabhupada. Sri Sutta said, on the western bank of the river Saraswati, which is intimately related with the Vedas, there is a cottage for meditation at Samyaprasa, which enlivens the transcendental activities of the sages. Report. For spiritual advancement of knowledge, a suitable place, an atmosphere, are definitely required. The place on the western bank of the Saraswati is especially suitable for this purpose. And there is the ashram of Vyasadeva, Sanyasa. Srila Vyasadeva is a householder, yet his residential place is called an ashram. An ashram is a place where spiritual culture is always foremost. It does not matter whether the place belongs to a householder or a mendicant. The whole Varnashram system is so designed that each and every status of life is called an ashram. This means the spiritual culture is the common factor for all. The brahmacharis, the grihasthas, the vanaprasthas, and the sannyasis all belong to the same mission of life, to remain the realization of the Supreme. Therefore, none of them are less important as far as spiritual culture is concerned. The difference is a matter of formality, understanding, and enunciation. The sannyasis are held in high estimation on the strength of practical enunciation. So we're beginning chapter 7, which discusses the story, it's a very wonderful pastime, a Maharaj cricket being saved in the womb of his mother Isura, and when Ashwatthama tried to kill him with Brahmastra weapon. But the chapter begins with a few verses about Vyasadeva and his realization, and how he, in meditation, understood all of spiritual knowledge and understood Vedas. So these first couple verses, you know, set the scene for, sorry, a little trouble with the microphone here. First couple verses set the scene of Veda Vyasa's meditation. Now, in this verse, it's described that he went to his ashram, which is on the western bank of Saraswati. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada picks up on that word ashram. This is the main thing he discusses about this verse. And so in discussing the idea of ashram, Prabhupada is really describing the system of Daivimara ashram. An ashram is the scientific division of societies and the four orders and divisions of work as enunciated by Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, and other places, of course. But Daivi indicates the aim. The aim is spiritual progress, be able to serve and to please Krishna. That is the real purpose of the Vanashram system. So the Vanashram system is natural. It's seen all over the world. It isn't something peculiar to Indian society or Hindu society, although it's formalized there, of course. Because we see that Vanashram principles are there everywhere. Everywhere in the culture of the world, you see there are people who are the intellectual class, or the religious class, the people who are the managers, the leaders, the warriors. And there are people who are the business people, and the farmers, the agriculturalists, and those who are the more common workers like that. So this is a natural system.
But you don't touch it.
Okay, but don't touch it. So, this, I have to have sense control here, not touch the microphone, it will fall apart. Okay. Society is naturally organized according to one's propensities and qualities. In fact, the Srimad Bhagavatam in the second chapter describes Varnashram. Verse 13 says, O best amongst the twice born, it is therefore concluded the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed from one's own occupation according to past divisions and orders of life, is to please the personality of Godhead. And Srila Prabhupada described this. He said, human society all over the world is divided into four castes and four orders of life. The four castes are the intelligent caste, the marginal caste, the productive caste, and the labor caste. These castes are classified in terms of one's work and qualification and not by birth. Very important, not by birth. There are again four orders of life, namely the student life, householder life, retired, and the devotional life. In the best interest of human society, there must be such divisions of life, otherwise no social institution can grow in a healthy state. And in each and every one of the above-mentioned divisions of life, the aim must be to please the supreme authority of the personality of Godhead. This institutional function of human society is known as the system of Varnashram Dharma, which is quite natural for civilized life. Now, that being said, there are problems with the Varnashram system as currently practiced. And Srila Prabhupada and his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Maharaj, frequently talked about these issues. Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur often lectured and wrote on the topic of Daivi Varnashram. This was at least in one period of his life in the 1920s. This was a constant theme of his. He talked about this idea of guiding our mantra. And Prabhupada also spoke often of this. And they were both critical of many of the current practices, because varnashram dharma, actually not even dharma, varnashram as it was often practiced, did not really follow this essential principle that we just described, that Prabhupada says, the aim is to please the Supreme Ability Personality Godhead. Without that, it is of very little value. Now, there were three basic criticisms that our acharyas, the Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta, particularly describe. Often, varnashrama's practice is based upon birth, rather than qualities and work. Bhagavad Gita 4.13 says, Chatur Varnya Mahalat Maya Shushtam Luna Dharma Vibhagasa Vishya Kataram Kimam Vidya Kharatam Apuryam. According to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society created by me. Now, important here is the guna dharma. It's a critical phrase. Because guna means, of course, quality. Karma means work. Janam, birth, is not mentioned at all. Nowhere does Krishna say your classification, your caste, your order of life is by birth. It's by your qualities and your work. But varnashram has devolved into what is currently known as the caste system in India, which is more based upon birth. And this can become very strictly enforced as a social class system and then becomes oppressive and actually works against the real purpose, which is that the entire society becomes more spiritually realized, closer to devotional service to Krishna. There's an interesting little book, it's in the database, it's called Renunciation for Wisdom. And this was a collection of Prabhupada's essays from 1948. Very interesting, because in some of the journals that Prabhupada continued to himself establish, Bhaktisiddhanta established, Prabhupada wrote a collection of essays on different topics. And Bhakti Kruswami, I believe, compiled these and had them translated and put them into this book called Renunciation to Wisdom. So what I'm reading is chapter 5, text 1. Prabhupada said, all these scriptures, he quoted many scriptures, fully support the varnashram system of four social and four religious orders. But what is today being labeled varnashram is an atheistic concept totally unsupported by the scriptures. Real varnashram is based not on birth, but on people's qualities and activities. One cannot reach the goal of the scriptures by practicing today's demoniac caste system. Pretty strong language. 1948, Prabhupada's going to the demoniac caste system. He and Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj and Bhaktivinoda and so many others, all the way back to Lord Chaitanya, completely went against the caste system and the smarter Brahmins and those who try to rigidly impose social restriction based upon birth or caste or class like that, rather than by one's spiritual advancement. So speaking strongly about it, he says, Prabhupada, this is only the introduction of deity varnashram, the transcendental varnashram system, will serve the purpose of the scriptures. This will move humanity toward liberation. So we're not so much interested in varnashram, but we are interested in establishing deity varnashram. And of course, in the Bhagavatam 1-13, continues that it is not the artificial domination of one division over another, this Prabhupada's purport. When the aim of life, realization of truth, is missed by too much attachment to sense gratification, the institution of varnashram is utilized by selfish men to pose an artificial predominance over the root perception. In the Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel, this artificial predominance is already current. But the saner section of people know it well. The divisions of castes and orders of life are meant for smooth social intercourse and high-thinking self-realization and not for any other purpose. So I think this is pretty clear. And of course, we see the practical example of this. Everything, all the way from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who fought against this, his most intimate associates, where Haridas Thakur, who was born in a Mohammedan family, completely would be outcast of Hindu society. Rupin and Sanatana Goswami, although they were born, I think they were born Brahmins in the Brahmin family, because they worked for a Mohammedan ruler, they would have been considered outside of the medical class. So Lord Chaitanya did not care at all for this, for this caste system, for this type of artificial varnashram. And of course, Let me see this in Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world, which was considered, I'm sure, even by many of his god brothers, as a place of mulechas and yavanas and most low-class people, and it was. But what did Srila Prabhupada do? Did Srila Prabhupada care about that and say, these people are not qualified? No. Srila Prabhupada made unqualified, low-class people into Vaishnavas. He created Vaishnavas by his transcendental potency and power and purity. And so we can see how our acharyas transcended any bodily conception of life and focused upon developing the spiritual potential which is there in every living entity so that everyone can come to the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. So this was the first point. The second point was there tended to be a belief or an idea that Brahmanism and religiosity was the point of our ashram. That Brahmins was the highest position, which of course it is. It's the highest position in the sense that Prabhupada says Brahmins are the head and the head is the most important part of society. So that is true. But just being a Brahmin in itself is not that important if one is not also a Vaishnava. Srila Prabhupada says in Purport 7.14.21, a Brahmin who is well-versed in Vedic knowledge and fully conversant with transcendental matter becomes a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore one should worship such a Brahmin or Vaishnava. So it's not that we discourage or that we disparage Brahmins. Brahmins are head of society. They're very, very dear to Krishna. Here's the question. A Vaishnava is superior to a Brahmin because whereas a Brahmin may know that he is Brahman, not matter, because that's what Brahmin means, one who knows matter, one who knows spirit. A Vaishnava knows that he is not only Brahmin, but also an eternal servant of the Supreme Brahman, Krishna. So that's a very important point. Now, actually, I just finished last night reading that biography of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, Sarada Vishnu, by Uttara Vilas. It's a very nice little book. And all the different pastimes and the history of the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. And these, as I said, this idea of Daiti Varnashram and establishing true religion, true religious principles in terms of the social fabric of society is very important to them. At one time, there was going to be a huge convention, a huge conference. And the main topic was Brahmanism and Vaishnavism. Very well known story, I'm sure you've all heard. It's always nice to hear. And what happened was Bhaktivinoda Thakur was invited, but this was at this point, early 1900s, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was fairly old and he was ill. This was towards the end of his life and he wasn't feeling well enough to go. So his son, Bhaktivinoda Saraswati Thakur, not the other guy, said, I could go in your place. Like, no, this is old. Oh, okay. He was making sound maybe a little skeptical. So Bhaktisiddhanta wrote an essay on the topic of Vaishnavism and Brahmanism. He presented to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and said, he was just ecstatic. And yes, you are the one who represents this. You go to the conference. So he did. And it was a huge, I'll read this from the book. Siddhanta Saraswati then presented his paper to the huge assembly. The paper was divided into two sections, the Prakritajana section and the Harijana section. Initially, he began to recite the glories of the Brahmins. The opposing pandits, these were all the smarter Brahmins and pandits and all these people, were beside themselves with joy. They had no idea there were so many verses glorifying Brahmins, and they eagerly heard Siddhanta Saraswati speak. However, Siddhanta Saraswati then began to explain and define the Brahmin, the Vaishnava, the relationship between the two, the qualifications of the guru, etc. And then the opposition's joy quickly subsided. When no one could offer strong arguments in response, a huge uproar commenced. Some counter-arguments were given, but Siddhanta Saraswati immediately refuted their contentions with searing logic. The meeting went on this way for 3 days. In 3 days, the debate summed up. On the final day, Siddhanta Saraswati was the concluding speaker. He spoke brilliantly with great vigor and incredible rhetoric for 2 hours. When he finished, no one on the opposing party could say a word. There was simply no way to counter him. There was a huge uproar and acclaim of the Yogi Vacharya. Thousands of people rushed forward to take the dust from his lotus feet. Siddhanta Saraswati was thus acclaimed as the greatest ruler of the conference. So in this way, our acharyas and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati are one of the strongest ones of upholding this principle of Vaishnavism, that service to Krishna is foremost, not whether you're born a Brahmin or even whether you were a Pandit or whether you had some religious learning or to do ritual ceremonies and this, but were you serving the lotus feet of Krishna? That was the important thing. And this was so firmly established by his strong preaching activities. And then, of course, we see Srila Prabhupada took up the same mission, same way, and spread this vision, this idea that anyone can become a lotus feet of Krishna all over the world. Now, there's a third point, and this point is mentioned in the purport specifically by Srila Prabhupada, that Varnashram sometimes can be seen as materialistic or superficial, not realizing its actual purpose. So one has to, Varnashram is fine as long as we know how it should be directed. In fact, Srimad Bhagavatam very strongly says, in 1.2.8, the occupational activities of a man performs, according to his position, are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction to the message of personality. So Varnashram without Krishna is useless labor, according to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada says, this is the first end of this purport. This is just one of my favorites, a beautiful purport, Srila Prabhupada writes. The need of the spirit soul is that he wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage and fulfill his desire for complete freedom. He wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. He wants to see the free life in the spirit. That complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit, the personality of God. There's dormant affection for God within everyone. Spiritual existence is manifested through the gross body and mind in the form of perverted affection for gross and subtle matter. Therefore, when we have to engage ourselves in occupational engagements that will evoke our divine consciousness, that is only possible by hearing and chanting the divine activities of the Supreme Lord, and any occupational activity which is not helping to achieve attachment for hearing and chanting the transcendental message of Godhead is said in here to be simply a waste of time. This is because other occupational duties, whatever ism they may belong to, cannot give liberation to the soul. Even the activities of the salvationists are considered useless because of the failure to pick up the fountainhead of all liberties. Such a nice purport. Because not only is it beautiful in its language and describing one's attraction to the spiritual realm, but also, of course, further directly for the message of Godhead and the message of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. But it's also important in that it's describing how one attains this. Now, not through mundane activities or necessarily duties, but they must be directed toward the Supreme Personality of God. Otherwise, they're useless labor. One more quote, Prabhupada purport. As long as one is in the material world, you must follow the principles of Varnashram Dharma, that devotional service is transcendental. The system of Varnashram Dharma refers to three modes of material nature. The transcendental devotional service is on the absolute. Another way that we sometimes look at this is maybe a dharma and sanatana dharma. And we all have our dharma, so we run our ashram dharma while we're in this world. But there's also sanatana dharma, our eternal duty, our eternal occupational activity. And Prabhupada said that sanatana dharma, he said it's like the essential essence. So just like you can't take liquidity from water or heat and light from fire, it's the essential essence. So the Sanatana Dharma, or the essential essence of the spirit soul, is devotional service to Krishna, to bhakti, to the love of Krishna. That is essential. And that is what we must try to devote, try to develop, and try to somehow perfect if possible.
Yes, you love impossible.
Okay. Should it be turned up in there? I made a mistake, I touched it.
Because the rain sound is making noise.
Oh, okay. Because we're getting interference from the rain.
loud rain, although it always seems good to have rain. Rain is pious. So, bhakti, pure service, is above the principle of Arnachan Dhamma. Even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his conversations with Ramananda Roy, and Ramananda Roy presented Varnashram as the perfection of life, Lord Chaitanya rejected it. He said, this is superficial. This is external. It still goes further to what is in the internal. So in one sense, we say, well, we're not so interested in Varnashram. But on the other hand, our scriptures are filled with descriptions of how important Varnashram is. So which do we follow? Devotee actually follows both. We neither neglect our duties, we do not neglect moral behavior, we want to see society created in a way that is going to best further the needs of society as well as having everyone spiritually advance, and still we always understand the highest principle of devotion to Krishna. So we follow those dharmic principles. Prabhupada said, as long as one is in the bodhicitta concept of life, one has to follow dharma. And all of us are in the body conception of life to some degree or another. So we have to follow. We're not above the rules and regulations. We're not above the laws. We're not above varnashram. But we understand that eventually one will transcend even those things. So humans must live according to religious principle. They must control their senses. We need a regulated life, and we want to create an orderly society. Therefore, the need for varnashram. And Prabhupada emphasized this. He said we need to create varnashram within a greater society. And we also know that our real purpose is hearing and chanting the glory of the Lord and our relationship with Krishna. It's interesting that once Dr. Drew Swami said something in the lecture, and I wanted to make sure I heard it right, so I asked him personally. And then I think another time, a couple years later when I was with him, I asked him again. So I heard it mentioned three times just to make sure I had it exactly right. You know, you don't want to misquote something like that. Especially if the Prabhupada said, you know. Okay, so Bhakti Kusami was with Srila Prabhupada at the end, as we know. And this was, he said, during about the last week of Srila Prabhupada's manifest existence in this world. So to the very end, and obviously Prabhupada's giving like final instructions. And we know some of those. So Bhakti Jusamai, somehow they were talking about Varnashram and the need, and Bhakti Jusamai was talking about, you know, there's a need to establish it. And Prabhupada said to him, Varnashram is for the outsiders, not for the devotees. Yeah, interesting. Varnashram is for the outsiders, not the devotees. In other words, it's necessary to establish Varnashram for society so that people can gradually come to higher and higher planes of religious life, spiritual life, and Krishna consciousness. But for the devotees, not so important. Like, I've never seen, like, in a temple, we say, you're a Brahmin, and you're a Shudra, and you do this, you know. No, we don't make those divisions amongst the devotees. Now, everyone has different propensities, yes. And people serve according to their abilities, according to their body, mental structure that they have, naturally. But we don't preclude anything. And how many people started out washing pots and end up being gurus, right? I mean, there's absolutely no restriction in devotional service, and all devotional service is on the equal platform. So we don't make those distinctions. We don't say, oh, well, you're just a shooter, you just do this work. No. We say, all right, you do this work, it's just as important as the person preaching, it's just as important as the dhari, and you can do that eventually if you want to do that. There's no stopping. There's no restriction. Devotional service is unlimited and unrestricted. So, what is our duty? Our duty is to create, as Prabhupada's talking about in this purport, a true ashram. And Prabhupada said ashram is a place to worship. So in any situation or status of life, we want to be able to nicely practice Krishna bhakti. Specifically, Prabhupada talks about in this purport, he talks about this idea of ashram, that although Vyasadeva was a householder, his home was an ashram. And Prabhupada says, he said, an ashram is a place where spiritual culture is always foremost. It does not matter whether the place belongs to a householder or mendicant. That's in today's purport. So Vyasadeva, of course, was a householder. His son is Shukadeva Swami. I forget what his wife's name was. You remember? You know, I always feel like Yasei's wife should get some credit because she carried Shukadeva Goswami for 16 years, right? Before he was born. But I don't remember her name. Anyway, she's obviously a heroine as well, being the mother of Shukadeva Goswami. But at any rate, Vyasadeva was one of our greatest devotees, our greatest acharyas in our line. He compiled the Vedas. We have, you know, in other words, absolutely pure and perfect devotee. And he was a householder. So marriage and family life is a natural part of this material world. And grihastha life is part of religious practice and spiritual life. And the idea is, again, getting back to sort of ashram. In other words, it's not just ordinary life or, well, it's not that, well, I'm married. No, you're in a grihastha ashram. So an ashram means something specific. I think the word actually means shelter. And it's one of the definitions of ashram is shelter. So in other words, we take shelter in these ashrams, whether it be a sannyasa ashram, a brahmacharya ashram, a grihastha ashram, because it's a place of shelter, meaning a place that we can nicely and happily perform our devotional service to Krishna. So it doesn't matter. Obviously, Prabhupada said we give special respect to the renunciants, to the sannyasis, because they have shown this high level of renunciation, and that should be given all of our respect, our greatest respect. We also remember that there were so many wonderful household devotees. I was actually counting them up once. The 12 Mahajans, which were given by Yamaraj, himself, who was one of the Mahajans in the 6th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 7 out of the 12 Mahajans were householders. And then, of course, there's renunciates like Narada Muni and Shukadeva Goswami, but Vyasadeva, I forget all of them, I have to count. But that's what I was counting at one point.
Brahma
himself, yes, Brahma was a progenitor. and think of in our own, in more recent times, Srivastacharya, Vaikacharya, householders, Lushikai Mahaprabhu, the householder for a few years before he became announced. And of course, we have Srila Prabhupada, who's in household life for many years, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in household life for many years. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had how many children?
Ten
children. Yeah, Bhaktivinoda was his fourth. I think his fourth son, anyway. So, I mean, in other words, here is Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of the greatest acharyas ever. Sometimes he's called like the seventh Goswami, you know, because of his writing and his great, you know, his whole great realization and presentation of Krishna consciousness. He has 10 children. You know, so there's no restriction. There's no restriction, limitation on spiritual advancement on one's varna or ashram. On status and life. And of course we have in our scriptures, of course, different ways of looking at it. Because there are these examples and glorifications of how one can be Krishna conscious in family life. And there are also warnings about material detachment. So we're not becoming overly attached. And there are some things that are said about grihastha life or grihamedi life which aren't very, you know, do not reflect well upon the idea. You know, so we have to always remember, we have to balance this. We have to balance, beyond the designations, beyond the bodily concept, we have spiritual attachment, we utilize everything in the spirit of Yukta Vairagya, to serve Krishna, but the purpose of the Grihastha Ashram, as all ashrams, is spiritual advancement. And we must avoid the tendency towards material entanglement. At the same time, we have to perform our necessary duties. Prabhupada made this distinction very clear. Now, there's many quotes, but I just picked one here. This is in the Science of Self-Realization, Chapter 1. It says, the grihamedi should be considered as a blind man driven ahead by uncontrolled senses about to fall into a ditch. Isn't that Balad Maharaj's description? How's the life like falling into a blind man falling into a ditch or falling into a deep well? The opposite of the grihamedi, however, is grihastha. The grihastha ashram, see, I'm talking about ashram again. The grihastha ashram, or shelter of spiritual family life, is as good as the life of a sannyasi, a member of the renounced order, regardless of whether one is a householder or renunciate. The important point is that of relevant inquiry. The grihamedi, however, is simply interested in the animal necessities of life. The grihamedi's life is full of calamities, whereas the life of the grihastha is full of happiness. There's quite a distinction. In other words, if a householder is a Krishna conscious devotee, he can be happy, perform his duties, his devotional service to Krishna, And if one is not, if one is a materialistic householder, a griyanadi, a non-devotee, his life is full of calamities. It's simply, you know, a victim of the material modes of nature, of the threefold miseries and, you know, birth, death, disease, and old age. And, you know, there's really, really very, very little hope for the materialistic person. It doesn't matter what his ashram is, but one tends to become more and more entangled in household life if one does not have bhakti or devotional service. So a certain austerity is required. We do want to control, we do not want uncontrolled sense gratification. And the key to that is our sadhana. Somehow we need to arrange our life to include the five principles of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting the holy name, worshiping the deity, associating with devotees, residing in a holy place. So particularly hearing and chanting, that is our method of Krishna consciousness, our method of spiritual advancement, whatever ashram one is in. Whatever one's particular duty, one's service, one's propensity, if we are chanting Hare Krishna, hearing the words of Krishna, then we are on the right path. So through devotional service, one can be successful in family life, in Vyasa ashram, or any ashram. I'll conclude with one example. The story of Kurma Brahman in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I guess this is, I'm not sure where Prabhupada is quoting this, but he says, here's the story from Chaitanya Charitamrita, CC Mudja 7, 126 to 129. Lord Chaitanya met a very spiritually advanced Brahmin priest in South India named Kurma, who became overwhelmed with devotion toward Lord Chaitanya and wished to leave his family and join him in his travels to Brichi. The Brahmin begged Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, my dear Lord, kindly show me favor and let me go with you. I can no longer tolerate the waves of misery caused by materialistic life. So one might think this would be very pleasing. He wants to get out of the hang of material life and be with Lord Chaitanya and travel with him, become renounced. Lord Chaitanya, though, said something quite differently. He replied, don't speak like that again. Better to remain at home and chant the holy name of Krishna always. Instruct everyone to follow the others of Lord Sri Krishna as they are given in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, become a spiritual master and try to liberate everyone in this land. It's such a nice instruction because it tells him that you don't need to renounce, you don't need to leave everything, you don't need to go and travel and follow me. Stay where you are, do your duties, fine. Chant the holy name of Krishna, become a preacher, liberate everyone in this land. He didn't say, well, you're pretty fallen, pretty attached, so you better just stay here. No, he's saying you become spiritual master. You can liberate everyone in your area by giving spiritual instruction from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So that potential is there for everyone. Everyone can become a guru. You don't have to necessarily become an initiating guru, but one can preach, one can instruct others, one can become a mentor, a shiksha guru, one can simply pass on the words of the books and instructions to Srila Prabhupada, you can simply chant the holy name, give that to people, whatever way that we can, in any status of life. As Prabhupada said, we all have, I'm going to read it, he said it, but we all have the same mission. I'm sorry, I lost my place here. Okay, here we are. The Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Varnash, Vanaprast, and Sannyas all belong to the same mission of life, namely realization of supreme. So, we all have the same duty. We all have the same mission. And our mission is to understand Krishna, get out of this material world, and try to give Krishna consciousness to others. Thank you very much. All glory to you, Prabhupada. Krishna, so are there any questions or comments?
Any question, comments, you can type it on the chat room or you can text.
No?
Not yet.
we'll give it a minute. Sometimes Prabhupada referred to
Swami, you finish now the rain is stopped.
Yeah, now the rain's up. Anyway. So sometimes Prabhupada referred to his young household devotees as Grihastha Sannyasis or Grihastha or something like that. You know, and in fact, I was thinking about in the early days when we joined, those of us who were householders, it wasn't all a whole lot of difference. We lived pretty much like the brahmacharis did, you know. We lived with, you know, maybe with a wife, sometimes they even lived separately, you know, in the ashrams like that. But the same life is there, same renunciation, same, you know, doing the morning programs, going out on Harinam, or going out on Sankirtan, or doing your service. So there was very little distinction. Of course, later, especially as we got families and like that, then, you know, householders needed to work and make livings like that. But there was very little distinction in the beginning.
I have a question. Where this idea, the words coming that Prabhupada, before he left, he said he finished his 50% and 50% work. Where did this idea coming from? Is floating is not true?
No, he talked about that. I think it was during the Gitanagari lectures. Is where he talked a lot about Varnashram. It was in one of his last trips to America. I think it was 77 or 76. In Gitanagari, he spoke for several days about establishing farm communities in Varnashram. No, Prabhupada wanted that, no question. You know, but he also wanted to make... But in one sense, for devotees, it's also a little different. And the Prabhupada talked about becoming self-sufficient. You know, in other words, growing our own food, having our own milk, our cows. In other words, it's a good life for devotees to lead. So he wanted us to... There's a little bit of difference, and sometimes these two things are conflated, about establishing self-sufficient farm communities and establishing Varnashram Dharma throughout the world. You know, and sometimes we think Varnashram only means taking care of cows or something. No, Varnashram means everything, all the ashrams, all the varnas, you know. So, no, Prabhupada certainly wanted this. He wanted us to establish farm communities, self-sufficient communities, and he also eventually wanted us to establish Varnashram through the whole world. So that, you know, everyone could become more and more Krishna consciousness. You know, and Prabhupada talked about, he gave distinct descriptions. We talked about like concentric circles where, you know, like the Brahmins were very close in the middle around the temple, doing the temple worship, and then farther and farther out you had people doing agriculture and like this. And some people would not be so much devotees, but they're not that they would be totally out of the system. In other words, they could still assist. You know, they could be, in other words, people could be favorable and assist, you know, Krishna consciousness, and therefore make advancement.
But in one sense, according to Bhagavad Gita, also, I mean, I feel also, when I reflect my own life, we are born with a particular nature anyway, made by three modes. So we are born with born, whether we like it or don't like it, we know it or we don't know it, we are still born with it, we cannot escape from it.
Right.
And Krishna actually, the verse 1860, Svabhava Jana Kunteya, you are compelled to act what you are born, whether you fight for me or fight for my Maya. Mm-hmm. That is the only choice you have, he told to Arjuna. So, born is there, but the ashram is not there.
Mm.
They are not born with the ashram.
No.
But ashram requires a teacher, guru.
Uh-huh.
Without guru, there is no ashram. So Varna we are born with, but ashram, so varnashram when we say it, it's like a literary, like a whole society itself.
So in one sense, for devotional service, we could almost say ashram is more important.
Yes.
Because Varna is there anyway.
Yes.
In fact, in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's writings and speeches about it, he gave examples. He said, you see elements of Varnashram in Europe or anywhere. They're not devotees, but you know, they have a monarchy, they have their kshatriyas, they have, you know, everyone has these things, and according to one's propensities, you know, one tends to. And is that connected with birth? Somewhat, but it shouldn't be restricted, is the point. It should not be, in other words, somebody could be born in a poor family, but they could be intelligent, they could go to college, and they could become a doctor, which is more of a grammatical, you know, type of work. Or, in other words, there shouldn't be limitations, but yes, we do have propensities And Krishna also says that one should do one's own duty imperfectly rather than take on another. You know, so we definitely don't want to try to do something which is, you know, beyond, you know, our particular responsibilities and duties. You know, it's better to just want to do that. So yeah, there's a lot of sides to this. You know, it's not a real simple thing. I've always felt that it's a very complex thing, and I think even when we begin to discuss Varnashram, it's hard to really get a grasp on the whole idea. And I think there's a lot of misunderstandings, and there's a lot of, you know, I don't know that we fully understand it, and that's why we haven't been able to really implement it very well, as Srila Prabhupada indicated. So, I mean, there are a lot of perspectives on this, and there's certainly different perspectives.
But you made a very nice point that in our society, because the whole society function is based on transcendental platform, so we don't distinguish who is doing what service.
No.
They're all equal level, whether cleaning the bathroom or altar, dressing the deities.
I mean, sometimes the devotee will say, oh, I have kind of a Vaishya nature, I like to do this and stuff like that. Well, yeah, we understand we have different natures that correspond to us, but like you said, we don't designate devotees. You could be good at doing business, and you could also be a Brahmin and be doing on the altar dressing the deities, right? I mean, you're a businessman and you're a great preacher.
Well, actually, my son had a question, I remember a couple years back when I gave him a gift to the shop. He said, sometimes I will tell the customer that, oh, this is close to my cost, it's like a, or maybe my cost, but it's actually large. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm telling you in public. Anyway, so then I opened the page where Prabhupada put in 18th chapter, a businessman may feel like this, that I should not do any more business because I had to lie sometime to a friend, for you I don't make any profit. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada said like that.
Yeah.
So that doesn't mean, then Prabhupada writes that Krishna said every work has some fault.
Some fault, yeah.
That doesn't mean one should give up.
Right.
One should, even despite fault, one should continue his own nature, activity, instead of adopting somebody else's nature.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting, and I think of Srila Prabhupada and how he was a businessman, and, you know, he had his pharmaceutical business, and sometimes he was very successful, but he said sometimes Krishna also took it away from him, you know, which is not because he wasn't, you know, good at it, because it was Krishna's design, you know, his plan. But so, Prabhupada didn't just become a Babaji, did he? Or something? No. In other words, he actually used that propensity that he had to manage so expertly, you know, in organizing a worldwide society, managing the ISKCON society. You know, we all know how, you know, he taught the devotees how to keep account books, everything, you know. So, in other words, but he did it all for Krishna. He just, you know, he used all of his propensities, and I think I've always felt, and I'm sure others would agree, that, you know, it's not that there weren't any other devotees, other pure devotees maybe, but I think Krishna picked Srila Prabhupada to do this mission, not just because of his purity, which is of course there, but also because he had a unique set of talents, right? He had some unique propensities which allowed him to come to the West. He had the courage to be able to do that. He had to somehow be able to understand other cultures, other societies. He had to be an organizer. He had to manage a society. There was one story, remember, when he set up the BDT Trust. The lawyer that he worked with later told the devotees, he said, I've never had any client who understood better exactly what he needed and what we needed to do to establish this legally. No?
Yeah.
I mean, here's a sadhu who knew exactly how, in a foreign country, how to set up a legal entity. So, I mean, we could glorify Srila Prabhupada on and on, you know, Krishna gave him all of these abilities and all, you know, to be able to do this mission of establishing Krishna consciousness worldwide.
It's funny that one of his godbrother said something about his businessman technicality, that he knew how to spread this. So when they told this to Prabhupada, that, oh, your godbrother said you are a businessman, so you know how to actually make it happen, and you did it, And Prabhupada started laughing and laughing. And laughing.
Yeah.
But as they, Mother Vishnupriya says, thank you for Lord Chaitanya's quote, which makes Krishna conscious simplified, as was Srila Prabhupada's mission also. So then it becomes confusing when there are so many, when there are so many details. Guidelines and instruction to wade through. So you advise adapt what works for you.
I'm not sure if I exactly understood the question. Did you understand the question? Okay. There's so many details, it's hard to understand everything.
Krishna consciousness simplified as Prabhupada's mission also. So then it becomes confusing when there are so many details.
Yeah.
That is also true. I mean, it's true. When
yeah.
A lot of rules say at the same time Krishna consciousness
is. Oh yeah, I think that's a very good point. I mean, the essence of Krishna consciousness is very simple. Anyone can understand it. A child can understand it practically.
Yeah.
The details, very complex. So much deep philosophy, so much detail, so much, you know. So I've always found in my own life, you know, kind of like stick with the simple things you understand, hold on to those, make your faith strong, and, you know, gradually learn more and more. You know, learn the details as you read, and as you develop, and as you go along. Don't worry about not understanding everything. You know, better. But probably, I would say, if all you know is that Krishna is God, you tell people Krishna is God, and that's perfect. In fact, if you are convinced that Krishna is God, you're pretty advanced. You know, your faith is very strong. So.
And Vrindavan, Golok Vrindavan has a Durga Varnas.
What was that?
In Golok Vrindavan, Krishna used that Durga Varnas as a nourishing. Between the, like a Brahmana would complain that they are reciting the verses glorifying the Lord and they want to be in love with, no, they want to create a more eagerness to serve the God, but Nanda Maharaj's son walked by and it diverts their whole attention. Some or other they feel so much attracted to him and they feel also guilty that they are not pursuing towards God instead of him. So that I feel like Krishna is taking advantage of the varnashram. At the same time, he wants everybody to follow varnashram.
Yeah.
I mean, the gopis, they are married. So somebody may say literally.
They don't follow it very well.
No, they don't.
It's an example of transcending the limitations of varnashram. Example of the gopis.
Yeah.
In fact, that's when they didn't Krishna praise them. You have thrown off everything. You have abandoned religiosity, your reputation, everything.
Yeah.
You've given up for me. But that's a very high level.
Yes. Yeah,
not that we should imitate.
Yeah. No.
Okay. Thank you so much. All glories to Prabhupada.
Yeah.